Welcome to Single Again, Now What? Blog Talk Radio Show with your host, Joni Winberg. Join Joni and experts from across the country for a weekly educational and uplifting show to support you, make you laugh, or just be the thing you need to hear at this time in your life. And now, here's Joni.
Hello and welcome. This is Joni Winberg, your host of the Single Again, Now What? Blog Talk Radio Show. I am very excited to introduce my guest for today, but before I do, I would like to take a few minutes to once again welcome our listeners. If you are single again, either through divorce or the loss of a loved one, then you have come to the right place. We have created this show especially for you. Being single again is an emotional roller coaster ride, but you don't have to face this challenging time in your life alone. So please join myself and my special guests from around the world each week who will be sharing tips to support, inspire, and encourage you. Maybe these tips will make you laugh or be just the right thing you need to hear at this time in your life. The Single Again Now What Blog Talk Radio Show is brought to you by the National Association for Women and Children. For more information, go to nadwc.org. Our show is live, so if you have any questions for myself or my guest, please call 347-215-6997, and that number again is 347-215-6997. And today's show is very special. We're actually going to be addressing the question, does your marriage have signs of the putt-putt syndrome? And this is all about the movie called The Putt-Putt Syndrome. And we're going to be talking to my special guest, which is Patrick Wanis, and he's going to tell us a little bit about this movie, but Patrick is also the exclusive relationship expert for the movie. And let me tell you a little bit about Patrick before I bring him on. He's originally from Australia. He is a celebrity life coach, author, expert in human behavior and relationships, and a clinical hypnotherapist with a PhD in health psychology, human behavior, and hypnosis. Patrick has appeared on Fox News, Extra, The Mike and Juliet Show, CNN.com, Matchmaker.com, The National Enquirer, and much, much more. He has over 5 million people have read his books in English and Spanish, and his website is www.patrickwanis.com, and that's PatrickWanis.com. And Patrick, welcome to the show. I'm thrilled you're here.
Thank you, Joni.
Well, this is quite a movie. I am very excited to learn more about this because, I think we hear a lot about this, don't we? The putt-putt syndrome of
Well, of course, this is a new terminology. Well, it's a new phrase created by the writer and director of the movie, Alan Cognata, and we were just talking about this yesterday. And it's, I guess it, you know, although it has a very interesting and very catchy term, it's something that probably hasn't been labeled before. And the best way to sort of describe what is the putt-putt syndrome is to use something straight from the movie. And there are two key characters in the movie, Tony and Johnny. And Tony and Johnny are best friends. And Tony's about to go through a divorce, and he's got a couple of kids. And he's trying to work out how did this happen, and his wife cheated on him. So he's doing all the research and trying to come up with ideas and reasons and, you know, with graphs and statistics about why did this happen and why do wives cheat. So Tony is speaking to Johnny, and he comes up with his latest theory, and he describes the putt-putt syndrome as that quiet surrender in life after one has been married for a while. And he says, and I quote, some of the symptoms are the one-minute missionary sexual romps, the plaid pajamas that one wears at home, the recliner chair that becomes a throne, and the remote control that becomes the scepter. But the most serious symptom of them all, Tony says to Johnny, is not being able to look at your toes or your, you know what, while you're taking a shower. That's how you know you're in it. So, of course, suddenly Johnny is really listening, and Tony's descriptions begin to ring a bell. Now, that's the way that it's sort of described in the movie. And, of course, I, based on my expertise and experience, would add to that to elaborate and say it encompasses a lot more because, of course, that's a really quick, fast way of describing it. But I think for anyone that's ever been married, anyone that's ever been in a long-term relationship, unless they've worked extra hard and been really aware of what's going on, the putt-putt syndrome basically means that you've gotten to that stage in your life where you've lost your dreams, you're settling for second best, You're living in a life of mediocrity. Your marriage is stalled. There's no passion. There's no romance. And your partner, instead of being a lover and someone that you become excited about, has become like your roommate.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of talking, and instead of talking about passion and all the things you want to do and all the excitement and the romance, and instead of, you know, still seducing your partner and courting your partner, you're discussing bills and problems.
So, Patrick, let me ask this question as far as, I think it really applies to both men and women. They're both feeling it, did you say? I mean,
oh, of course. This is not about, you know, although in the movie it sort of says, you know, Tony says to Johnny, look, you know you're in the putt-putt syndrome when you look down and you can't see anything other than your belly, and, you know, you're just sitting there in your remote control. As the movie progresses, you know, you see that it really does affect the man and the wife. It's not to say that the man's wrong and the woman's right or vice versa. It's to say that both partners contribute to this. And, of course, you as a woman, and with all of the people that are part of your list and your listeners of the National Association for Divorced Women and Children, understand that this is something that is real and something that happens.
Yes.
And it's something that doesn't just affect marriages. It affects long-term relationships.
Well, what you're saying, Patrick, is what I hear a lot from my clients after they've been divorced, and they describe basically what you're describing. But I'm curious as far as how did they come up with the name putt-putt syndrome?
Well, you know, I've got to speak in more detail with Alan about this, the writer and director. But you know, I view it as an analogy of sort of like the car. You know, you're driving along and it's about to stop. You know, it's stalling and it's going putt,
yeah,
putt, putt, and you're waiting for it to completely crash. You know, completely just shut off, switch down, and now you're stuck in the middle of traffic. That's the same as the putt-putt syndrome in marriage, where you know it's not just slowing down, it's not just stalling, it's almost going to completely come to a stop or it's going to break down. And once it breaks down, what happens? The marriage breaks down and the two of you go separate ways, whether you separate, whether you divorce, or whether something else even worse happens. But I think it's a great way to describe it.
Perfect.
Yeah, because really what it's another way, you know, here's another way to think about it. And that is, imagine that you're a car and you're all polished up and you're shiny. And this analogy more for men than women, of course. But you're a car, you're all shiny, you're polished up, you're revving, and it's got this beautiful sound to it. And off you go. The race is on and you're just speeding along and you're feeling really powerful. And then suddenly you start to run out of gas and you're slowing down. And now you're about to come to a dead stop. And that putt-putt sound is the engine almost giving up. You know, it's almost gone. Well, that engine represents the passion, the romance, the fire, the bond between the husband and wife that's almost gone. And now there's no connection, there's no spark between the engine and the rest of the car. There's no gas, there's nothing. It's just completely shut down. And although it may sound, you know, colorful and flowery in the way I've described it, anyone that's been through this knows it's not a pleasant experience. And, you know, when the team came to me to say, Patrick, will you be our exclusive relationship expert to help us to not just promote the movie, but to talk about this and help to offer solutions, when we were talking about this, I said, look, this, you know, although I've never used this terminology before, it's something that I easily relate to through my clients. And I'd like to use some examples. So I have clients that come to me, and they may not even be having the one-minute sexual romp. They may have not had sex in years. And sometimes it's the husband that comes to me and says to me, I don't know what to do. My life is so boring. My wife is just, you know, she doesn't give me any attention. We don't have any sex. There's no passion. And then what you come to find out is that the husband has spent years and years focusing on his business, focusing on his career. Why? Because the man, the male, believes my role is only the provider, and what I must do is work hard and make money to look after my wife, look after my children and family, to make sure that they go to college so when they grow up, they'll do the same thing. Meanwhile, the wife is starting to feel neglected, lonely, isolated by the husband because he's working long hours. He comes home. What are they going to talk about now? The bills and the children. And maybe he's tired and he goes, oh, I just don't want to talk about anything right now. And he wants to, you know, pull out a drink from the fridge, throw his feet up on the sofa and watch some TV to try and mentally switch off.
Mm-hmm.
Now the wife starts to see that, wow, we're losing this connection. And then what happens is she's also caught up in the day-to-day running of, you know, the whole family, the house. Maybe she's running the house and she's working and she's looking after the kids. Now what she's going to do is put all her energy into the children. So now you have these two adults who made a pledge to each other, who came together because they loved each other so much. They were so excited. They wanted to create a life together, but they've really created two different worlds. The man is losing himself and escaping in his world of work and career, and the woman, the wife, is escaping and living in her world with the children. And it's almost like two separate worlds. And please step in, Joni, and tell me if I'm right or wrong here, or if this.
Well, and also, what I'm seeing too now, I can see young people who they're both working full time.
Yes.
They decide to have children, but today the woman still works, and so now, even if both parents are helping taking care of the children, I can still see the same thing happen where they're both trying to have their careers and earn the money. They both need to pay the mortgage. Plus, you know, who's raising the children? So someone's picking them up, someone's running around, and that, you know, the supper's kind of thrown on the table, and someone's throwing the kids in the bath, and they repeat this day in and day out, and they still get lost in the shuffle because they don't have time for each other, and they're exhausted.
Right, so please stay with us because I'm going to give you some solutions, some strategies, advice, techniques, and some other, you know, insights into how to get out of this syndrome.
Well, I think let's break it up in two parts, I think, Patrick, because I think it's very important. The way I look at it is that, you know, being a coach myself, I love to help people prevent from getting a divorce. So I'm thinking if we go from maybe that direction, what people, married people can do to maybe save their marriage, if that's the route you're thinking, but also thinking, okay, if you are single again, you've gotten a divorce and you're starting to date and get back in the other game, in the game again, the dating game. But we know that the second time around, divorce is even higher for the second marriage. So it's almost like needing to prepare and prevent that from happening. So do you think that's a good angle for our listeners to...
Well, you're exactly right. And I think you've raised an important point that if you don't learn the first time round, you'll just end up approaching the second marriage, the second relationship exactly the same way, making the same mistakes. Mm-hmm. And as I said again, I'm going to, in a moment, come back with solutions, et cetera.
Right.
But I want to talk a little bit more about the syndrome itself and keep building on this example. So you mentioned young people. Now, of course, young people are working two jobs because of all the financial strain and the expectations of we've got to have more, we've got to do this, we've got to do that, we've got to cover all bills, et cetera. So they're both very physically, mentally, and emotionally tired from working as well as raising the children, and then having to develop a relationship amongst themselves, or, you know, the relationship with each other. Now,
right.
The people who are a little bit older are also living another version. The other version, which I guess to a certain extent affects young people as well, is where the parents are now putting the children first.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm finding is clients are saying to me, particularly women, saying, look, you know, my mum and dad were too busy when I was growing up, and they didn't have much time for me, and they didn't come to all my co-curricular activities, and they didn't do this, and they didn't do that, so I want to make sure that my kid doesn't miss out, so I want to take my kid to every co-curricular activity, and I want to spend lots of time with my child or my children. Now, the danger with that, particularly women think that they're doing the right thing, and of course, with the best intentions. And I'm going to be radical here, and I'm going to say, please bear with me, and I'll explain why this is completely wrong.
Okay.
So what the woman does, as I, again, I'll say this, with her best intentions, she says, I want to make sure that my children have all the options, all the choices. I want them to see that the world is an oyster. And so what she does is she jumps in the car, she's driving them to every single game, every single hobby, every single co-curricular activity that there is, and she has no time for herself, and no time for a husband, no time for the relationship. Why is this so bad? First thing is, if you're a woman, ladies, please listen to me carefully. If you're a woman and you're raising your daughter and she sees that you as a woman are putting everyone else first and not giving yourself any time, not giving yourself enough respect, enough significance, she's going to grow up and do the same thing. So what I'm saying to you is, you have to still look after yourself, your own needs, your own quiet time, your own personal time. You need to still be exercising, because not just to look good for your husband, but because your body needs it and you need the time so that you can regenerate and regroup and recuperate. The other thing, as I said, was the message you're sending to the girl, to your daughter is, You know, women are second-class citizens. We don't need to be first. We need to think of everyone else's needs. Then the other thing you're doing is you are neglecting your husband. You're neglecting your partner. I'm not saying to put him first. Here's what I'm saying. When you neglect the relationship, thinking, I've got to look after the children, I've got to put the children first, when the marriage breaks down, the very first person that's going to suffer, even before you do or your husband does, are the children. So what parents forget, you must actually put the relationship first. If you put the relationship first, children who learn three ways, by what they see, by what they hear, and by what they experience, look at the parents and see the parents expressing love and affection to each other. They hear the parents, you know, using terms of endearment and cute pet names, etc. And they have wonderful experiences of open love and affection and open communication. That child grows up in an environment of love. It's a nurturing environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to say to your child, no, you cannot go to every single co-curricular activity. No, you don't have to do every activity that's on offer. You must learn to choose. And you must learn to find out what your passion is. I'm not saying that the child's going to know what they're going to want to do for the rest of their life, but let them make some simple choices. Let them experience some independence and give your relationship and your marriage some priority. And I want to refer to a couple of things that are really interesting based on research with couples that have been married 40 and 50 years, Joni, and that sounds like a shock to us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
These are like the masters of marriage. You know, they've lived it. And they've had wonderful experiences and great tales. One of the things that they say, and this was an actual couple who said, you know what we do? We have a time when we go upstairs and we put a sign on our bedroom door that says, do not disturb. This is our time. And they do whatever they're going to do in the bedroom. The point here is that they haven't forgotten why they've come together. And, you know, even though children, young children go, oh, yuck, mommy and daddy are kissing, mommy are doing, oh, I don't even want to imagine what they're doing, it's actually something that they like. Because just a couple of weeks ago, I was working with a six-year-old child who happens to be the son of a movie producer. And he came to me and said, Patrick, please work with my son. And I said to him, you know, I don't work with children. I usually work with adults. You know that. He said, but please, my child's been to a child psychologist for about six sessions, and he's been to another therapist, another expert, and he's having problems at school. Please help me. So what I did was I sat down and I did a couple of things, you know, to very quickly build rapport with him, and I got him to do some drawings. And there's a couple of drawings that I do. One is known as kinetic drawing analysis, and this has been around since like the 1940s, where you basically ask kids to do a drawing of the family, but in action. So when the child draws this, he'll do a figure of his mum, his dad, his brother, his sister, etc. And what I saw was a completely separate world. Mum is out there, you know, working with her clients, doing nails and makeup. Dad's behind the camera producing the movie. This particular boy is at school, and the other boy is standing in front of the house. The boy that I'm working with, who's only 6 years of age, is sad. Because I said to him, well, describe this boy, and I'll call him Robert. I'll say, what is Robert doing here? And he'll say, Robert's at school. And how does Robert feel? Robert's sad. Why is Robert sad? Because mum and dad are not together. They've just separated. They're about to divorce. And what about little brother? Oh, little brother's mad. So my point, and then I do another drawing to help him to establish, you know, what is his connection with his mother? What is his connection with his father? The point of me going into this detail is to say to you, children are deeply affected by what happens in the relationship between mum and dad. And you know what this one boy wanted, Joni? He wanted his mum and dad to be together.
Of course, yeah.
And he didn't want them to scream anymore. He wanted to see the love. So mothers and fathers, or people right now listening that are single who want to get back in a relationship, even if you're going to be in a relationship with a new partner, be aware that love is a great example for your children. So is passion, so is enthusiasm, so is excitement, so is fire. That's what inspires us. That's what opens up our soul. So, and I'm sort of leading on to some of the tips and the strategies. I just want to summarize what I've said so far, that the whole reason that we stop is because we lose our sense of priority. And our sense of priority has to be the relationship. I'm not saying you neglect your children. I'm not saying not to put them first when they really need you. I'm not saying not to take them to school. I'm saying find a balance where you make sure you don't neglect your marriage and your partner, because the stronger your marriage and relationship is, the better environment you're presenting and providing for your children.
And from also, I was just going to say, and also, Patrick, as far as if people can also finding that balance, like you said before, kind of recapping too, is that it has to start, find that time for yourself to recharge. Find that time for the relationship. I love it when I hear people say, we have a date night on Friday. That is wonderful to hear. Yeah. And then have the time for the children. And I think what you're also saying, too, is that the children will learn the boundaries that, yes, mommy and daddy have their time, and yes, mom and daddy have their separate time. Mom's going to exercise, dad's going to play golf, but yet they have their time as the date night, but then they have the family time. So it's almost like if people can learn to balance those. And what really happens, as you can see, the first two get ignored. We don't take time for ourselves. We don't take time for the couple situation. Then all of a sudden, we go our own way, and there are the children, like you said, feeling sad and angry.
Exactly. And you've got to, if you're an adult who missed out on certain things as a child, please do not use your children to make up for what you didn't get as a child, because it won't help you and it'll really damage the children. Whether that means giving them too much freedom or giving them lots of toys or giving them lots of candy or giving them too much attention or telling them when they don't deserve it how wonderful and great they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how we've come to this narcissistic generation where the parents are saying to the kids, when the kids have done nothing and they haven't worked yet, they haven't achieved anything, they haven't even tried, oh, you're amazing, you're fantastic, you're unbelievable, you're the best. And what they forget is children need not just encouragement, they need direction and they need correction. And if you just tell them all the time how great they are, but you don't correct them and you don't reward them for achievement as well as effort, then the children end up growing to become narcissists. And then when they become narcissists, they come to me because they can't have a relationship with anyone else, and they come to me complaining that deep down they actually resent their parents because their parents never disciplined them or never gave them the right advice, guidance, and direction. So that's a really important point.
Absolutely. So why don't we touch base as far as, because I know you wanted to share some tips as far as how, first of all, we can go either married people or single again people, either one, but maybe how each group can learn from this. And what would be some tips, Patrick, that we can help them with, all our listeners?
Well, let's do exactly what you said. Start with the single and build to how that leads to marriage, and then how, once you're married, to keep it going. So if you're listening right now, whether you're single or married, what I'm about to say is applicable. Because I want everyone to go back to when they were single, and everyone remembers that at some stage, whether you're single now or not. You remember the days when you were single, because, again, this is something that a client said to me. Oh, when I was single, I used to do this, and I used to do that, and I used to be excited, and I used to have regular sex, and everything was exciting. So I want to start by just giving some examples of what men look for in a relationship and what women look for. And I'm not talking about, you know, communication and trust and honesty. I'm not talking about those values and qualities. I'm talking about what does a man need and what does a woman need. A man is really quite simple to please. And no, it's not just food and sex. Or, you know, there's an old joke, you know, how do you seduce a woman? And there's a long list of about 60 things. And how do you seduce a man? Well, show up naked and bring food. But it takes a lot more than that. For men, it's sort of interesting because the man wants to be treated like a king. Now, that doesn't mean he wants to be served all the time, but he wants to feel needed, okay? The next thing is the man does want regular and exciting sex. The third thing, which is probably at the top really, is the man wants his woman to look good. Not to be the most beautiful woman or the sexiest woman in the world, but to look good. That means to take care of herself. I'm going to tie all this in, how this applies to being single and being in a relationship. And then the fourth thing is the man wants his woman to not just be with her, but to do things with her. And I'm going to distinguish this from what a woman wants. The woman ultimately wants to feel special. So she wants to feel that state of ecstasy, that state of love. She wants her man to be with her. She wants to be treasured and cherished by her man, to know, whether that means being told or being shown, that she's the one, the only one. The other thing that a woman wants, this would be number three, is be empathetic and listen to me, but don't give me advice all the time unless I ask for it.
That's probably one of the things that I hear, Patrick, the most. Women say they want to feel heard, and not with the man sitting there with the remote in his hand. They want that. They were ready to throw the remote out the window, but they just want to feel heard and respected for who they are. And
well, respect, you're right. Respect.
Not to be fixed, right? We don't want to be fixed. We just want to be heard, and I just need to vent, so hear me. But that's perfect, Patrick. You're right on there.
And I want to add to this, because what you've said is so important. I want ladies to understand, why do men do this stupid thing, which is the woman comes home, and from wherever it is, whether it's from work, or a problem with mom or her mother or her father or a sibling or the children, and she proceeds to say, oh, I've had a terrible day and this has happened, the male says, oops, let me fix it for you.
Right.
Now, I want to tell you why we do this. Because it's our makeup that we are so action-oriented, we feel that our significance and our value comes from doing things. And so we think the same way that we'll show you our love by providing for you and giving to you, we think that if we can offer you the solution, then we're significant, we're important, we're valuable, we're special. We feel the need to be needed. Now, men listening, you can still have that same result by being active in your listening.
Yeah.
And what that means is she's talking to you, you are listening 100% attention, and you're repeating back some of the phrases. You might express empathy. You might express sympathy. It's okay to be disappointed for her, but just listen to her, hold her, let her know that you've heard her and you understand her. Because I promise you, she does have the solution. She just wants you to listen. Now, am I correct on this or not?
You're perfect. And in fact, a great exercise, just like you're saying, is for both parties to actually, they can set the timer if they want, that each party talks for 5 minutes, the other person just listens, and just like you said, then you repeat it back so that that person knows that you were listening and that they feel heard. And then even taking it a step further, Patrick, is to say, did I get that right? So now I repeated it back to you after you were listening to me, and then I say, did I get that right? So now you can go back and help that person listen even more, or if they miss something, or you can continue on with the conversation. So, but you're right. That's perfect. If people can just really listen and repeat back, then we know either party, man or woman, and they know that that person was listening and heard them.
That's great advice. And number four, in terms of, you know, what a woman wants, is respect my body. Don't touch me sexually 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've told you the four things a man wants, the four things a woman wants. Now, how does this relate to the putt-putt syndrome and what we're talking about? When you understand what the other person needs, and you're single and you're now looking to date again or you're looking in a relationship, you keep that in mind. Now, what the heck does respect my body and not touch me sexually 24 hours a day have to do with the putt-putt syndrome or marriage? It's really simple. When you're dating, you court, you seduce, you anticipate, you plan, you prepare, and you think of ways of how am I going to win her over? How am I going to create something really exciting for her? How am I going to seduce her? How am I going to get her excited? And suddenly you're creative. You're coming up with ways. There's flowers, there's chocolates, but more than that, you think about, what does she really like? Is she into horses? Is she into dogs? Is she into candles? Is she into lighthouses? Is she into nature? What's her favorite color? What's her favorite thing to do? And then you appeal to that, because that's how you win the woman over. The problem is that men, once they marry the woman, think, I've won her over. All I need to do now to show my love or to continue expressing my love is provide for her. The lady, on the other hand, thinks, I've won him over. Now, all I need to do to show my love for him is, you know, either is to raise the children or to be a good wife or to be loyal, etc. And the man and the woman forget about what's required to keep the passion going, to keep the fire burning. And to keep the fire burning, you must stoke the fire. How do you stoke the fire? You keep throwing on wood, and you take the timber, and you prod the wood. Now, what that means is that ladies have to keep looking after themselves. You have to take time away from the kids to do your walk, to do your exercise, to do your yoga, to do your meditation, to look after your body, to maintain your femininity and your sex appeal, because your husband wants that and he needs that, and he needs to do the same thing. And when you look after, because I teach holistically, when you look after your body, you feel better mentally and emotionally, you exude more confidence, and when you feel better about yourself, you respond and react better in the relationship, and you have a better sex life. So that's that aspect. The other thing to understand is the same way that you're trying to win them over, keep winning them over in the marriage. I know there's bills to pay. I know there's stress. I know there's challenges. I know there's responsibilities. But as you said a moment ago, Joni, set up a date night. Mm-hmm. Now, the concept of a date night is plan time for you and your husband or you and your wife and no one else. You plan someone to look after the children. If you can't afford it, get husband, get mum or dad or mother-in-law or dad-in-law and get someone to look after them or, you know, grandpa or grandma, someone to look after the kids for a couple hours. Now, men, I'll give you some advice. If you're going to do this, you don't just show up at the last minute dressed in raggedy clothes and you still got grease on your hands or you're still dressed in your suit from work or whatever you're wearing. You actually prepare for the date the way you would when you were single. Now, if you really want to excite the woman, you use your imagination. And guys can do this because guys are very smart when it comes to really planning. They just have to make the decision to do it. So I was talking with the publicist of the putt-putt syndrome the other day, give her an example of this. And I said, imagine if a guy calls you up or he texts you, because, you know, we're in the day of technology, and he says to you, honey, 5 o'clock Friday, the kids are taken care of. 5 o'clock Friday, meet me at X Hotel, put on this dress, these shoes, and have a swimsuit, and have this and have that. No questions asked. Just meet me at 5 o'clock. Now, I'm texting you this on Wednesday. I'm going to see you tonight. I'm going to see you tomorrow night. And, of course, when I come home, you're going to say, what was that text about? What do you mean 5 o'clock Friday at X Hotel? I don't know. I'm not going to tell you. It's a surprise. The lady's now thinking, and what I'm doing is I'm creating anticipation. I'm creating expectation. I'm creating surprise. That starts to release in the body endorphins known as dopamine. Dopamine gets you excited. That's the romance again.
Well, I can tell you, Patrick, from a woman's point of view, that's exactly what the wives or the women are always saying. I wish he would just do something without me having to tell him to do it. I would love him to use his imagination, use his creativity, and surprise me and just make me feel like we did when we were courting. I can't tell you how many women want that.
And you know, you're exactly right. An interesting thing is, and I'm going to explain this, but men, women do want you to take charge and they do want you to take control. Not to be controlling, but to take control. That means become the leader. The same way that you would lead in a business or the office, they want you to lead. They want you to have an opinion about the restaurant. You can ask her, okay, which restaurant do you want to go? And she'll go, I don't know, honey, what do you want? And then you go straight away, okay, we're going to Chinese tonight. And if she really doesn't want to, she'll speak up for herself. But let her know that you're in your mind, you've got direction, you're clear. Prepare something romantic. Come up with something creative. And I'm gonna state this and I'll make it a question. I've found from working with clients and from all the experience and the research I've done that women do want to submit to men in a safe, gentle, romantic, sexual way. And what I mean by that, and please correct me if I'm wrong in any way, what I mean by that is they want to know that the man is clear about what he wants, he's got direction, he's self-confident, he's self-assured, so that she can feel safe to trust and let go. That's what submission is, letting go.
But and that's perfect. That's perfect, yes.
But she has to know that there's a reason to let go and submit to him because he's going to sweep her off her feet. That's what sweeping her off her feet means. You know, I feel safe in his arms. I know that he loves me. He's going to care for me. But it also means that he's thinking about how to get the woman excited because, you know, guys are visually excited. That means we just need to see you looking good. Women, on the other hand, require a lot more because they're deeper, they're more complex, they have much more complex emotions. You have to appeal to their heart, mind, and imagination. Then you're going to use words, you're going to use visuals, that means, you know, flowers, things, you know, poetry. Think again about how to get her excited. Now, if everyone listening thinks this is hard work, part of it is hard work. That's true. But the other thing is plan for it. Plan for it one day a week, the same way that you plan to go to the dentist, you plan to go to the therapist because you're about to have a divorce, or you plan to go somewhere else. Plan now, but understand, you know, in doing more research with marriages that worked out, what I also found was they acknowledged that it was hard work and that the intention was to make it work. And that it's not just we're in the comfort of this marriage, so therefore we don't have to do anything. You
that
do
is
have
so
to
true.
Keep...
Yes.
Because you know what happens, Joni, is, again, Alan and I were just having this conversation, Alan being the writer and director of the movie, that it's so easy to get caught up in the lives of the children and in the paying of the bills and the day-to-day responsibilities that it's so easy to lose the passion. So separate the two. If you need to, set aside 1 hour, 2 hours, and okay, for the next hour, we're going to discuss all the crap that we have to get through, the kids, the bills, etc., and then switch off. You know, hang up again if you need to and go back and say, okay, now I'm calling as me. We're not discussing business. Now I just want to talk about you. So what I'm saying is it's almost like you're blocking time, and you have to do that. I know it's not the way we'd like to do it, but there's a difference between being right and being happy. And if being happy means, you know what, I've got to block time. Let's block some time to sort out the challenges we have, and then let's block time for us to be romantic, to appreciate each other, so that we're no longer just roommates, so that we can get to know each other. Now, I gave the men advice, and let me give the ladies advice. And again, feel free to kick my rear if I'm incorrect.
I'm listening, Patrick. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, I'm waiting for you to count. I'd actually like you to do that. But anyway, let's see. Ladies, I said for the men that they've got to take charge, they've got to control, they've got to keep seducing, they've got to keep courting. Now, ladies, here's what you need to do for men. You need to keep the mystery going. And I'll let you elaborate, Joni, on what that means.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to keep the mystery going. You've got to still play the fantasy roles. And I don't mean just dressing up in different boots and different dresses, but men get bored easily. You've got to keep him excited with mystery. You can play a little bit. You can be flirty with him. You can occasionally, you know, do the little tug of the rope, you know, back and forth, where you're playing a little bit hard to get, where you tease him. He's going to hate that, but he's going to love it underneath. Now,
absolutely.
Joni, you're a woman, so please elaborate.
Well, what I was just going to say, even like you did, you mentioned that the man would text her a couple of days before to say, Friday night we're going to do this and go here and wear this. Well, it also can work for the women to do that, because she can tease the man to say, I have this exciting night. And she can get into, you know, use all the descriptive words she wants. She can text him whatever she wants to do. But it's also teasing and playing him as well, having him anticipate what's going to happen. Maybe remember some of the things that he loved when you dated that really turned him on or excited him while you were dating, knowing that the kids are gone and taken care of, and I have this planned. And do you remember this when we used to? And whatever she wants to do to really create that excitement. And I think it must play for both men and women to know that that person cared enough to take their time out of especially their busy schedule, their busy life, to plan for that person. This is how much I love you. I'm taking the time to plan and create an exciting time for us. You know, because I know even people that have date nights. It's like that becomes old. Okay, we're going to the restaurant. We're going to have dinner. We're going to drive home. But, you know, really, like you said, you've got to be creative. And I think women need to just get back into teasing the men a little bit and having them have some fantasies of their own of what's going to be involved. And so how's that feel for men? What do you think, Patrick?
I think that's great because, you know, the other thing that both men and women need is a surprise. It's mystery. Mm. It's a tease. It's flirting. They need the passion. And again, you know, men express their love to a woman just one of two ways, really quite simple, is either providing for them or through sex. That's how a husband also wants to express his love. You know, I have female clients who say to me, well, all he wants to do is have sex. And I said, with who? She goes, well, with me.
Oh, well, that's a good thing.
I said, really? He wants to have sex with you? Why does he want to do that? And then she's like, huh? And I said, well, you mean he does want to have sex with you? It's not with someone else, right? Well, yeah, but all he wants to do is have sex. I said, because that's the way he shows his love. Now, he obviously needs to learn that that's not the only way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true that men forget, that women need emotional support, and they need to be praised, and they need to be reassured, and they need to be cherished and treasured and reminded and reinforced that they're the one, the only one. And guys forget that. But women also need to understand that that's how men are expressing themselves. So understand that that's how he's going to express himself to you. And if you're not feeling it because there's something else lacking in the relationship, then both of you need to work on that. And you can simply ask the other partner, out of a 10, how would you rate our marriage? And he might say, what? Well, out of 10, 10 being the best, how would you rate this marriage? And she'll go, I don't know, 5 or 6, whatever number. What do you think is lacking? I mean, ask the other partner. Talk to each other. You mentioned a moment ago how a date night can become boring. You're exactly right. So what you need to do here is take the hat off. When I say the hat, take off the hat and the costume that makes you a mother. Take the hat and costume off that makes you a father, and be again a woman, be again a man, be again a woman and a man that are trying to seduce each other. Mm-hmm. You know, poetry. Use technology to your advantage. You can send them you can send your husband or wife, your partner, you know, if you're single and you're starting a new relationship, send some flirty messages via text. Mm-hmm. Send some flirty messages via Facebook. Keep the passion going with those rather than saying, have you paid the bill? I can't believe you forgot the electricity bill.
That's true. You know, the other thing too, Patrick, I'm thinking, is to be impulsive. I mean, think about it. When people mm-hmm. are dating, that was probably the biggest thing that had probably attracted most people, is that they were impulsive. It's like, hey, you know what? Are you free? You got a minute? I know we've always got bills to pay. We always got something going on. We've always got work. But you know what? It's going to be there when we get back. We can escape. I know a couple who, I mean, they're just an unbelievable couple. They used to go into the city, because I'm in the Boston area, and they would just go and rent a room for an afternoon. And they would just, you know, it didn't have to be a big ordeal, a whole weekend or anything like that. She said every, I don't know if it was once a month even, they would just meet in the city and then rent a room. And she said, that was our time. We escaped. We shut everything off. No texts, no phones or anything. And she said, and that just really helped our marriage. And we didn't, in fact, we did it in the afternoon when the kids were still in school. So it didn't even affect anybody. We weren't even missing the taxi cab driver that we are for our kids. So she said, we didn't miss anything, but it worked out perfect. And it's amazing what it did for their marriage. So it can be just that simple.
And what a great example, because that was another example given to me by a couple that had been married for around 40 years. Mm-hmm. And what he said to me was they would do exactly that. They would, you know, go to a motel or a hotel for one night of the week, not every week, but when they could and when they could afford it. And it would just spice up their relationship. I think the other thing, too, that we haven't discussed, but definitely is brought up in the movie, is about your dreams. You know, mm-hmm. what are your dreams? Because it's easy for us to lose our dreams and to live off the dreams of our children. Mm-hmm. Yes, as a parent, and this is another one of the things I teach, your role as a parent is to provide everything that's necessary for your child to live his or her full potential. Not for the child to be what you couldn't be or what you never had a chance to be. Because I remember, you know, even with my parents wanted me to become an attorney or a doctor, you know, when I was just trying to decide what I wanted to do in college. Although my father was an engineer and my mother already had a PhD, but I wanted to think, well, what do I really want to do? And, you know, what happens if your child wants to be a musician? If your child wants to be an actor or an artist, a painter or something else? It's not their job to make up for what you didn't have. So when you as an adult are in a marriage or in a relationship, don't lose sight of your own dream as well. Whatever that dream is, whether it's, you know what, I've always had a dream to go skydiving. I've had a dream to go rapid rafting, water rafting. Or I've had a dream to visit this country. You can still make it happen. And what you're teaching children, as long as you don't neglect them, is self-respect and knowing how to look after yourself. This is a really, really important example for children because it also teaches them about boundaries, about discipline, and hey, you're still a child, respect your parents and let your parents have their time. And then the kids, when they grow up, will actually love you and appreciate you more than if you did everything for them. talking about your audience, which you said to me, single again, now what? I have clients that come to me who are single, and I will sometimes work with the mother and the daughter, or the father and the child. And I had one lady come to me, and her daughter is 17 years of age, and she said to me, well, my daughter and I used to be best friends. And I said, well, that's not the role of a parent. You're not meant to be their best friend. You've got to kick their behind sometimes.
That's right.
And she said, but I want to be best friends. I said, no. Your child is not there to replace what you're lacking from a relationship with another adult, a man. Now,
And also, Patrick, just to even understand it, myself being a single mom and raising my children since they were 12 and 9, and now they're 29 and 25, and one's a doctor herself of audiology, and another one is graduated from a very prestigious school in Boston and works now in Manhattan, and I'm very proud of them. But playing both roles at that time, I had to really have the love from the mom, you know, to show that, yes, I still love you, but I also had to be the disciplinarian to say, you know, okay, these are the boundaries, these are the rules. I'm reacting to your actions. You might not recognize your mother. I mean, like someone said, you had that fear in your kids? And I said, absolutely. They needed to know the boundaries. They needed to know that, yes, I love them, and it's not because I don't love them if I'm reacting to their actions, but I'm doing that because I love them. So that's a hard thing to really be able to separate that, and you're absolutely right. We don't want to be their friends. That can be their friends now when they're 29, but not when they're 12 and 9. You've got to be the adult, the boss, but yet knowing that you love them. And I always said to my kids, I don't care how big you are, I'm always going to give you a ton of hugs, and I'm always going to love you. But this is how your mom reacts.
You're exactly right. And here's the most shocking thing I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. When the child, particularly for people listening right now who are single and have children, when you give up everything for your child, listen carefully, please. Your child is going to resent it, and your child's going to grow up with guilt, and your child's not going to be able to have another healthy relationship, and I'll briefly explain why. I have clients who are now adults, you know, 25, 28, even older, who come to me and complain that they ended up making up for what their mother wasn't getting from another man. And they resented the fact that their mother gave up everything. In fact, a 17-year-old client said to me that she resents her mother for not having a boyfriend. And her exact words were, I wish Mum would get a boyfriend. And Mum goes, I can't believe. And then I said to her, Mum, I said, here's what she said to me. I can't believe she would say that. Why would she say that? I said, because she wants you to have her own life. She doesn't want you to give up everything, because then she feels guilty that she can't be herself.
Exactly.
So it's about balance. And I think what we need to understand is, if you give up too much, if you put your, this goes all the way back to what we started talking about at the beginning of this. If you give up everything and forget about the relationship, you place a lot of guilt on your children. Your children will feel guilty that you sacrificed for them, and they'll start to think that they weren't good enough, or they'll expect it from everyone else. Mm. And if you neglect your marriage, you're actually neglecting your children. So when you neglect your partner, that's when your partner will start looking outside the marriage to get those wants and needs met. So you've got to rebuild why you came together. What brought you together? What were your dreams? What were your fantasies? And you know what? If you have a great body and she has a great body, and when I say that, I don't mean you have to have society's idea of a body. I mean that you look after your body, that you dress well, that you do go to a hairdresser, that you do dress up in sexy clothes, that ladies, you do put on lingerie for guys. Guys like that, they love to see their wife in lingerie. When you do that, the message to the other person is, I'm still excited by you, you still are important to me, I still love you, I still want you. Whether it's I want you to take me now or whether I want you, it's the same message. So,
I was just going to say the other thing too, Patrick, is that when I see a man or the woman or the man sees the wife taking care of herself and vice versa, is that, wow, I respect you because you respect yourself. You love yourself enough. How can I not love you? So to me, you know, how attractive is that, you know, from a woman who's maybe in her sweats and let her hair go and starting to get overweight, or the man gets the big belly and, you know, he's out of shape. I mean, if you don't care enough about yourself to love yourself, then you're thinking, well, how does that other person love me too? I mean, if you don't respect yourself, would you say?
What a great point. That is a key point that you just said. And I was just saying this to Alan Cognata, the producer and director, just yesterday. I said, every relationship begins with you.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about this. And I said, what that means is the more that I love and respect and accept myself, the more I love, respect, and accept others, and the more that others will love, respect, and accept me. So you've got to build up a good relationship with yourself. You know, you know your limitations, you know your strengths, you know your weaknesses, you love and accept all of that about yourself, but you respect yourself. Because when you respect yourself, I promise you, you'll respect your partner. And you won't
absolutely.
Respect your partner if you don't respect yourself.
Absolutely.
So I think I think you're planning to wrap up, and I was just going to say, what I think that this mm-hmm. is a great thing that Alan and the whole team have done with this movie, The Putt-Putt Syndrome, because it's such a great concept. And the way that they present it is really wonderful, because they touch on some really powerful points and issues. But it is a dark comedy, so there's a lot of funny moments to it, but a lot of really revealing moments, and a lot of not just moments, but events and emotions that people will relate to.
Well, I look at it, I'm excited to see it, because I hope that it's a wake-up call for people. I hope that people that are either in relationships or married to say, hey, you know what? We got to do something about it, because we just saw ourselves on that screen. And I hope that they wake up and start to look at it that way, to say, you know what, honey, we can do something about this. Let's make a plan. Let's change our lives. We also got our kids. They see and hear everything. Let's be the better role models for our kids so they can grow up and have healthy, happy relationships. So that would be my dream, is that people wake up, or if they are single again, that, okay, I'm not going to jump in a situation and do the same thing. I'm going to learn from this and be the best I can be.
And it's not too late, and I think that's the point you're making. And I guess for me, you're right, it's not too late. And I guess for me, Joni, the final point I'd like to make is, please also understand that within any relationship, once you enter the security of the relationship, and notice I said once you enter the security of the relationship, your issues will come up, your insecurities will come up. So if you have a problem that, you know, you're afraid of rejection, or you have a problem with emotional intimacy, or some other fear, be willing to face that and then go and get the help that you need for that. Because remember, I said every relationship begins with you. So if you heal yourself of that, you'll help the marriage and you'll help your relationship. So be number one, it's not too late. You can take action. And if there's some other block, some other subconscious block, some other issue that goes back mm-hmm. to something that happened in your childhood, the way you were raised, heal that and allow your relationship to create a safe environment so that you
Absolutely.
Can speak to your partner and say, you know what, this is a fear I have, this is why I shut down, or this is why I cry when this happens, so that your partner can offer you that support, that encouragement, so that you really can have not just the sparks and the fire and the passion, but such a deep emotional connection that you keep growing and growing, and the bond and the connection keeps deepening and deepening, and then you'll have a really satisfying and fulfilling relationship and marriage.
Absolutely. Well, Patrick, this has been phenomenal. I mean, it's amazing how fast time flies, but everything that we've talked about, all the tips and the tools and the topics that you've touched upon today, I can't thank you enough, because I really just think this is something that's very powerful. I hope people go and see the movie, The Putt-Putt Syndrome, because I think it can really help make a difference in our society. And Patrick, I just want to make sure, once again, people have your website, which is www.patrickwanis.com, and that's Patrick, and then it's WANIS.com. And also, I just want to thank you for being one of our experts for the National Association of Divorce for Women and Children, and you are also on our website. I'm really excited about that, and honored that you are one of our experts as well, Patrick.
Well, thank you, Joni. It's my pleasure, and if people want to know more about the movie, it's theputtputtsyndrome.com. And of course, the word putt is spelled P-U-T-T, so it's theputtputtsyndrome.com, and it's a great movie. You're going to love it.
Absolutely. And also we want to thank our listeners for listening in. And also, Patrick, thank you for being on the show. And also remember to join us every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear the Single Again, Now What? Blog Talk Radio Show. And we'll talk to you next week.